So Netasurf, since 20 years or more than 20 years now,
yeah.
You're said to be a band who makes one radio hit after another. You think so as well?
No, I do. Well, we don't really make one radio hit after another. Well, unless very, very minor hits count, you know, because I guess Inside of Love got, I mean, obviously got popular, that did really well, so that's one legitimate radio hit, and then Inside of Love kind of did, Always Love kind of did. We always feel like every single song, I love the idea of hits in a imaginary way. I don't like the idea of legitimate hits in reality, because a lot of pop radio is pretty bad, and you know, also you have to get incredibly lucky, but we're always trying to write hits. It's just hits for some imaginary planet, you know. I don't care if we actually have them or not, but as long as it sounds to us like something that should be, then we're good.
Yeah, for me as well. It sounds almost easy listening. It goes through you.
Yeah.
You can jump into the song and listen to the whole record, and it sounds really like, whoa, another hit. Oh, another great song.
Oh, good.
Song.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's true. It's true. There are different, I guess, because you said radio hits, but there are, you know, we also feel the concept of like a live hit. You know what I mean? Like a song that becomes people's live favorite or something, and that's another kind of thing to shoot for, even if it's not on the radio. Yeah. But yeah, anyway, thanks.
Do you have such a hit on that record as well?
On this record? We started playing No Snow on the Mountain in the last couple of weeks, and we hadn't played it on this year really at all. And it's feeling really good live. We opened the show with the first song on the record, Clear Eye, Clouded Mind, and it seems to work. People seem to get excited about it. And then this song, When I Was Young, live doesn't really work at first. People get very chatty. It's very quiet. It'll happen. I mean, if you come to the show tonight, you'll see it'll happen. I'll start this finger picking and people start talking. But then by the end, it feels like it maybe worked in bringing some people somewhere, you know, taking them on a journey or something.
Your first record, High Low, in 1996, mm-hmm. It was quite angry. Maybe it had still a bit this crunch mood inside from the 90s. And after that, for me, your records are a bit more, I don't know, more sad, more soft or easy listening, but not that angry. Where has this feeling gone?
Well, I don't know if it that sensation that you had maybe came in part from the music. I think we used to play in a more intense way. I think at the beginning I was so obsessed with this band Chavez from New York, who were really weird and adventurous, and also Sonic Youth and Pixies, you know, it's all like really big deal to us. And so I think we thought back then that music had to stop and start and cut and go to half speed and go to double speed, and like all these events had to happen. And I guess that idea slowly drifted away for me, and then I was more concerned with basic things, just like catchiness and what the song is saying. And I think also it was partly a giving in to something that was always true, which is that I don't really write complicated music, but I used to write complicated chords. I would make up guitar chords, so the color could be kind of weird, but really I just like the Ramones and Buddy Holly, and I like three chord songs. And after a few years, I accepted the idea instead of fighting it, and just thought, well, now I appreciate how a simply played three chord song can really be complicated. I think it's after getting to old country music, you know, and there's this sort of illusion that country music is really just dum 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 dum, but it's so much more than that. Or like blues, which I don't really play, but I like to listen to if it's old, is, you know, you from a distance you can say, oh, well, it's just this one progression that everybody does, and then you get close and you're like, well, it's a whole world, just like everything, just like hip hop is, you know, from a distance people can judge it as being one thing, you know, like not real music or made just of samples and not interesting, when in fact it's this incredible art, you know. So I think that changed, And maybe I got sadder too, you know, as an adult. I don't know. I mean, life becomes more complicated. Is it like that?
Whoa. I rather read that you're more balanced now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like that, and it's not like that. Like, we're all complicated, you know. So I'm more at peace and happier than I've ever been, but also I've got a more complicated life and more concern than I've ever been. You know, you just become all, you know, we're all these things at once, you know, and they can be contradictory or in harmony or not, you know. Also, I think part of the record seeming to become sadder and more melancholy had to do with us not being as self-conscious about volume and speed anymore, because we really started like that. And, you know, we could only afford to practice 2 hours a week when we were kids, because that's the way New York is. Nobody has a basement or a garage. You know, you rent these studio spaces for $15 an hour, and that's $30 for 2 hours. And when we were teenagers, that was, you know, we could afford 2 hours a week, and we'd get in and just be so overexcited, because you had to pack in all the fun now, and, you know, we'd play so fast. And on our second record, there's a song, 80 Windows, which we still play live every night, you know, which was a little slower than the rest. And it was like some kind of weird thing I had to get over, like that we can slow down. We can do this. And now we're not afraid of that. So we end up checking out the other side of the coin, too.
Yeah, for me, your music has both. It has optimism.
Yeah.
And at the same time, this melancholy maybe between the notes or in the moll chords. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and maybe that's the kind, it's always this kind of nadir surf, you know, the meaning of nadir surf, mm-hmm. to escape from depression. Yeah,
that's true. No, you're very right. It is that way. I mean, there's a funny thing that happens with a lot of songs, which is that I start to write them out of a need to fix something or escape from something, like you say. But then the act of making music is such a joy. I mean, I've said this in a lot of interviews, so I'm sorry to be giving you something stale, but it's so true, is that the act of writing a melody or putting chords together or just that beat, you know, I just like rock and roll so much, you know, that's such a happy thing that it makes the song point up, you know. I could have been in a pointing down mood when it started, and by the time I've gotten to the end, I'm hopeful.
Well, it fits always to your mood. So if you're happy, you can listen to it. If you're sad, you can listen to it.
Oh, that's what someone said about nicotine. It's the only, I don't smoke, but it's the only drug that if you want to be up, picks you up, and if you want to calm down, it calms you down. It'll actually do what you want it to do, which is amazing.
So your music is like smoking cigarettes.
Yeah, well.
Could be worse.
It could be worse. Yeah.
Could be better as well.
But it won't kill you.
Yeah. you had problems for a long time. You had problems to call yourself musicians because you aren't able to read notes and that stuff. Mm-hmm. Now it has changed after 20 years.
I can't read, but read
when,
music, but I
when did that.
That
change, and when do somebody can call his or herself a musician? I mean, I play the guitar sometimes. I'm not a musician, but who is and who is not?
Oh,
you
I don't.
Money?
I don't know where. No, I don't know where that line. And definitely not money. But it's. I don't know where that line is. I guess it's how you think about it. I mean, you are, but for whatever reason, if there is a reason that you don't think of yourself as one, it's probably valid because it has to do with how you feel about it. You know, something changed for me, I think, when at the beginning of the band I was like I felt like a guitar player who was trying to sing, and then at some point I accepted I wasn't fighting my voice anymore, like I started to kind of like it, you know, and then start to sort of kind of be proud of it, and then sort of kind of take care of it, and sort of try and use it, you know, that kind of thing. Because very early on there were people who told me I couldn't sing and stuff, you know, I didn't get a lot of positive encouragement at first. And that's okay, because I listen to a lot of old tapes, and I can see why. But then I started to feel like a singer who also played guitar. So I think that gave it a bigger, like, and also producing records and stuff. You know, I don't know. I'm sorry, I'm meandering, but you know, I can't really sit down in a guitar center. You know, that big American, it's this big American music superstore. I can't sit down in a Guitar Center and impress any 14-year-old. You know, they can all smoke me to pieces, you know. And I can't and I couldn't be in a Broadway show and sing in a way that any director would think that was a good idea, you know. And I can't, on my own, totally control a computer and make great beats and produce, like, a hip-hop record or something. Like, I don't have any of those skills in a mega way, but I have enough of them a little bit. How to put a song together, how to get a band to play together, what a record should sound like, how to play, you know, that I feel like a all-around kind of a musician, but specific to rock and roll, you know. To a jazz player, I suck, you know, and to a classical player, I'm awful. But to a rock and roll person, I think it's a number of skills. All in all, why am I telling you? Because you asked me. Well, that's good. And being able to get lost in it, I think, is maybe a dividing line. Like, until you've figured out how to play within your skills, you know, like some drummers who are brand new, really primitive, can't play a lot, are fantastic because they don't try too hard. And some are always trying to do some fill that they can't do. And that's sort of like, maybe that's, if I can take the risk, that maybe that's, you're not a musician yet, if you're not listening to what you're doing enough to keep it controlled enough that what it is doing is pure and good and in a way perfect, you know, of its own version of perfection, however primitive that is. Maybe at that point, that's really a musician. Because then you can really get totally lost in it, because you're hearing what you're playing what you want to hear, and then you're there, and it's total joy. And you can do that with three chords, you know, two. You can do, you know, maybe one.
Yeah, I think it depends a bit on how much energy you offer.
That's true.
To the stuff. I mean, for me, it's the same thing with the slogan or the. I'm a music journalist.
Yeah.
I don't know if I am. So if I'm asked, what are you doing professionally? I'm a journalist. Really? Yes, really. I'm a journalist. I never knew that I would be a journalist.
Right,
I did it
voluntarily,
and now, of course, I am. I mean, that's my work. That's what I'm doing the whole day. And maybe the same thing with musician. I would never call myself a musician,
although
I play the guitar.
Yeah.
Because it's not my job, and I don't identify that much
with
musician as you do.
Yeah. Well, you know, I did music journalism for 2 years a long time ago, and I would never have said, and I wasn't a music journalist. Because I just never brought that much energy to it. I didn't live it for long enough to grow into it. In the same way that I'm really shy, my hands shake a lot. Well, it's not that bad right now, but they do a lot, I don't like being on stage, but I've done it so much that now, what I mean is I don't think it's in me naturally to want to be like the show person, but we've done now after whatever, almost 20 years, like I really like being on stage. I it actually changed through practice and now you're a journalist. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's isn't it great what time can do? Yeah.
Yeah. So the new record, it's quite rocky. It's a kind of rock album. It's maybe also relatively to the rest of your records, a fun record, maybe, expressing your balance at the moment. You have this live feeling because you recorded it in 5 days or so.
Mm-hmm.
And time plays an important role.
Mm-hmm.
So it's maybe a small concept on that record.
In
what sense? What meaning?
All we have is our own history to look at and learn from. You know, you can't learn from your future. You know, you can only guess at it or hope for it. But there's this, you know, you have a record. You know, how your life has been lived so far, and I think every year that goes by, I have a longer and longer record that I have to, reconcile myself with, accept that I'm guilty of, or insist that I'm innocent of, or whatever. It's just life, you know. But I think, like the song Teenage Dreams, for example, it could have been just called Dreams, and it wouldn't have to be teenage. I just love the way that concept felt, but the song actually is just about things you wish you could do and that you always can. You know, it has nothing to do with being young or old, you know. And when I was young, also in a way, it does have the first, the slow part, you know, picking part. That is all about, the second verse is all about how childhood felt, and the first verse is all about how it always feels to be in love or not in love, and then the big slow part is about a concept that was true then and is true now, so it's sort of timeless to me, you know, that going from a dream world when anything is possible or it's wide open to the same, you know, same house every day and back to the same life and the same reality is a shock. You know,
Is it a kind of retrospective in your biography as well? So it's about your teenage dreams and your childhood. It's quite biographical.
Yeah. And I think that's a good and a bad thing about how I write songs. Maybe, you know what I mean? That most of it's true, but that's also kind of limiting, you know, and there's writers that I love who manage to be more storytelling outside their own lives, and I really admire that, and if I have any, you know, specific ambition, that would be one of them, is to grow into that kind of writer. I'm still not very confident about saying anything that's not true, like that didn't happen specifically to me, you know. Mm-hmm. So it is a lot like that. Mm. It's true.
The opener, Clear Eye, Clouded Mind, is it, did I get it right? It's about a breakup, maybe, or a one-way relationship?
No, this is weird to say, but it's set in a specific place, did you read The Road by Cormac McCarthy? It's a post-apocalyptic book, and that song is set in a... Yeah, in after some disaster or after something, finally, when conditions of the world have changed so much that we're all like on the run or something, or barely surviving or struggling, and you're gonna miss the wood, means you're gonna miss nature the way it was, or you're gonna miss your life the way it was when it's all gone wrong. I mean, there's a lot of that on the record. Even the title, it's not like secret, but its other meaning to me is that climate change is indifferent to your belief in it or not. And people that don't believe that it's real and or influenced by man aren't going to be saved by that belief when things get weird. I mean, so there is a lot on the record about that, even though I have nothing to say about it. I have nothing to say. And nothing really... And even... I have no... Even as a non-activist, I have no, you know, like I'm in a band that travels in a giant bus that eats a ton of gas, and I fly all the time, and I live in New York and in England now. It's just terrible. I live a terrible life in that regard. But I can't help but feel like it's the one giant super cloud over everything. Also because I have a kid, you know, so the future is long to me.
Again, we have the future in another way. Yeah, I mean, that's the title, The Stars Are Different to Astronomy. So reality doesn't care at all what we know about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it happens anyway. Everything happens like it will happen.
Yeah.
And if we know about it, if we can predict something or not. So maybe we should, I don't know, don't care that much. Or yeah, we don't have to know anything.
Right. Well, and it doesn't... We have so many... There's so much conversation going on and not that much action, really, when you think about, like, 8 million cable news shows, 9 zillion blogs, how much information is put on the web every day. And it's just crazy, 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 but our lives haven't really changed, you know. So, in a way, all our talking and thinking that we can discuss our way into a better future, like, we can't necessarily do it, you know. But yeah, so well, it Also, the title is trying to say that we don't have enough humility with regards to nature. We don't respect it enough, and we're not scared of it enough, because it doesn't care how we're like, well, we'll, like in the Kyoto agreements, when they're like, well, we've all agreed that only a 2-degree rise in the next 20 years. That's we all agree with that. It's just, what a crazy concept that is. Like, we have any choice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think nature will survive us anyway, so.
Oh, yeah. No.
Nature doesn't care. Yeah. It's our problem, it's not the nature's problem. No.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe one last question. Jules and Jim, what is that song about? I didn't get it.
That's about...
Who are Jules and Jim?
Well, they're the characters in that Truffaut film.
Yes.
And the reason I used the title of the film and the names of the characters, Jules, Jim, and Catherine, is because it comes from my experience of having been in a emotional love triangle.
Oh, really?
Yeah, not a physical one. Yes, not a physical one, but an emotional one. And how difficult it was, and how, how stupid I felt and silly, but also really sympathizing with all three of us. You know, like, we're all guilty of being human and flawed, and I just had, I had real empathy to all three characters in our story, which is why I wanted to use because the film is like the love triangle icon. It's the most famous one, maybe.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to use their names just to express, without using real names, to express like that I have so much sympathy. But both, like, sympathy and anger towards all three of us, myself included. Like, we're all fools, but we're all innocent, and what a mess. Yeah.
Interesting story. I never heard about a triangle relationship without sex, or relationship in general.
Well, if there's
how does
a relationship,
that work?
And then, well... I don't know. I mean, if there's a friendship.
You say I love you and nothing happens?
No, it's just knowing that... Well, you know, I've had a pretty drama-free life in this department, but you know, when you read about, like, this classic thing in couples, like, if there was an indiscretion, right, that sometimes the view is like, well, if it wasn't physical, that's okay, but other people take the view that, like, if you cared, that would hurt. If you just went and, like, had some physical... you know, left turn, but did you love them? That was the part that would hurt. And so an emotional one, I think, is just when there's attachments that are inappropriate, you know, and how you feel about them. I don't know, I didn't explain that well, but yeah, it doesn't have to be physical, I think, it depends what kind of a person you are, but I don't know if you've ever been jealous of something when nothing was actually happening, but it was just so intimate. And real intimacy, as you know, can be over the phone and still be like more powerful than anything in the world, because you're like in each other's hearts, in each other's, you know, yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. I really enjoyed it. Nice.